Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, May 11th, 2015. And with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
It's all great, man.
That's awesome. Glad you're here. And Dave Hamilton, glad you're here, too.
I'm glad I'm here, too.
Yeah, yes. I'm just feeling all warm and fuzzy inside. Yeah. So I thought the first thing we could take a look at today is the news that the Fiat Chrysler CEO, Sergio Marchionne, and Brian, I bet you have an incredible pronunciation for that.
I only badly pronounce things in French.
All right. Well, you know, now you have something to strive for. It's good to have goals.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Anyhow, he met with Tim Cook, Apple CEO, and then he also met with Elon Musk, Tesla CEO, and was talking about cars. And I find that really kind of interesting, because why would he bother to talk with Apple if he didn't really think that they were working on some sort of car project? Well, I suppose it could be just more like CarPlay collaboration, but I don't think so. And especially because the statement that he made about the meeting, I thought was interesting, because he said he met with Tim Cook because Tim is interested in Apple's intervention in the car, and Tim sees that as his role. So apparently Tim Cook and Apple feel that that the automotive industry, making cars specifically, needs to have an intervention.
Yeah, well, we've seen that from Apple before, haven't we? You know, we know that one reason why iTunes happened was because Steve Jobs felt that Apple needed to save the music industry.
Right.
And we know that one reason why Apple entered the ebook retail business, i.e. with iBooks, was because the publishing industry needed to be saved from Amazon. And we know that Apple felt like the movie and TV show industry also needed to be saved a little bit from itself. So we've seen this a lot from Apple. And generally speaking, they've been right.
Sure. And now it looks like we're seeing that for the automotive industry.
Maybe. Yeah, it could be one reason why Apple... I mean, you know, and there's two sides. You know, one man's intervention may be another man's disruption, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, in many cases, well, okay, with Apple, intervention and disruption often go hand in hand.
I was just gonna say, it's kind of the one is intentionally causing the other, in every sense of the words.
Yeah, well, that was my point.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, Apple. This is what Apple does. They, you know. I mean, I think I said it on the last show I was on. They rarely do something first. I was going to say they rarely do something new, but that would be unfair. They rarely do something first.
Yeah, I think that's a better way of saying it.
Yeah,
rarely do something first,
and it's worked out really well for them, as you said, and for us, I should add.
Yep,
the consumers. Yeah. So, you know, cars, yeah. The industry needs an intervention. And you know, did Tesla start that? I think it's fair to say yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But did the Prius start that? Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Well,
right? In a way.
Certainly in a way. I mean, it really kind of depends on what else Apple thinks it can bring to the that it can bring to the to bear on this particular issue.
Right.
Right. I mean, from the standpoint of Apple making an electric car, other people, you know, Tesla, the Prius, even the, you know, the Chevy Volt and the Leaf, you know, those are all sort of starting points at the very least.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. And there were car makers back in the late 80s, early 90s. That were doing, I'll call them boutique electric cars. I'm sure you can still get boutique electric guitars.
Yeah.
So, it isn't like this is something that car companies have just recently started dabbling in.
No, but there was a lot of resistance, and there was certainly a lot of resistance from even consumers, but there was also, of course, the fact that the industry wasn't willing to plunk money into some of the areas of research that, say, Tesla has excelled at.
Yeah, that's true. And when you get a company that really goes all in, like Tesla, they tend to be a catalyst that drives other companies as well. And in this case, I think maybe that has played into Apple's determination to get into the automotive market.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to point out, Brian, you totally said Tesla.
Oh, man. Tesla. Tesla. Mostly pedantic.
Mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
Yeah. So anyhow, I see this as another data point that helps back up the sources that you've had, Brian, that said, yes, Apple is working on a car.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt of that at this point.
No, I don't think there is either. But it's still nice to get that validation.
Anyone who is still arguing that Apple is not making a car is living in a really weird place of denial.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of weird denial places out there. But that's like a totally different, creepy show. Anyhow, so but that whole intervention thing, that has me thinking that this totally fits into Apple's modus operandi, where they find their market and seriously shake it up. So
it's true. It's true. What kind of carnage will be left on the roadside?
Yeah. And so now the next thing is, how soon do we get to see Apple's car?
Let me ask a question, though. Do we think that Apple's car will be built for everyone? Because none of Apple's other products, and this, we could potentially argue about the iPhone here on either side of this, but otherwise, Apple doesn't worry about building products that with a product line that will serve everyone. They pick what product they feel they can do best, and they release it. And then from there, if that doesn't fit your lifestyle, well, that's okay. You're not one of Apple's customers. Or your price point, right? I mean, you know, lifestyle / price point is, and they're happy to let that, you know, people not be those customers.
Yeah, it's true. No, I don't think that Apple is going to be competing in the same range that Tesla started off competing, which was, you know, what was it, $90,000, $80,000,
$90,000? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think that's where Apple's going to come into the market. But it wouldn't surprise me if Apple entered the market at $50,000 or $60,000.
Right. Right. Which places out, I would say, most people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see them.
It places most people in this call out of the running.
Yeah, it's that's a lot to spend on a car. You know, so the question is this going to? Yes, it's going to be disruptive in a way that, you know, we could probably speculate on what those ways might be. Software wise, I don't know if they would have anything to add to the battery technology discussion that would be anything more than mildly iterative. They certainly haven't prioritized that with their phones or their watches. Although I haven't had too many problems with the watch, to be honest. In fact, I didn't charge it one night and was fine for the next day. Is it going to be something that like Tesla, right? Which was disruptive. Did it change what you get with a Prius? No.
No, it actually just allowed them. It allowed them to enter the market and be profitable.
Correct.
And to actually carve out a niche.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. So I can see Apple going for the $50,000 to $60,000 buyer. But then considering all of the efforts Apple has been making lately, well, over the past few years, to be environmentally conscious, to create products that are greener, so to speak. I could also see Apple, after they roll out their more expensive car, working to release something that's more affordable for the general public simply because that's good for the environment, assuming they can get people to buy these cars over gasoline-burning cars.
As long as it didn't have to sacrifice features. See, I mean, I think there's a premise here that I don't – there is a premise here, or I think there's a premise here, and if it is, I don't agree with it, that Apple's goal with this car is going to be, I want, you know, some environmentally friendly vehicle. I think they want some sufficiently technologically advanced vehicle that is that has a user experience that beats anything else that they feel they find out there. And that will come at a price, and they will put it at that price, and they will sell it to the people that can buy it and want to buy it at that price. And therefore, would they come back around years later and say, okay, well, we sold lots of these expensive cars. Now we're going to offer a cheap version that cuts half those features out? I don't think so.
No, but you may well be right there. I'm going to quibble, though, when you said that you didn't think Apple wanted to introduce an environmentally.
No, I don't think that is the main priority of what they're creating. Oh, I imagine it is, though.
I imagine it is a major driving force, and that's part of the intervention that they're talking about.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
I think Tim is really, really concerned about things like this.
So that's going to be the thing. You should buy the Apple car because it's better for the environment. And, oh, by the way, it has these other couple of things that aren't as important.
No, that won't be the way Apple sells it. But that doesn't mean that's not the reason why Apple's doing it. The two do not necessarily meet.
Right, but
in order to make an environmentally friendly car a reality for enough people for it to make a difference, they have to do everything else right, and they have to do everything else better. Speaking to what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. But I mean, again, I'm looking at the way it's going to be marketed, right? And so they're going to bring this thing to market, and I don't think they're going to say the main reason you should buy this car is it's better for the environment than that car.
I would agree with that. I'm just quibbling over whether or not that's a driving factor.
Well, but bear with me here. So that's that. Whether or not it's a driving factor, they're going to market this to people with the way they've marketed. Again, my presumption is they'll market it to people the way they've marketed everything else. Here's what we have. Here's how it makes your life better, not the world's life. Here's how it makes your life better. And yeah, oh, by the way, we did all these awesome environmental things that nobody else has done, right? And I think they'll talk about that, assuming they do it. But they're going to have to sell it to individual people, one person at a time, right? And so you've got to decide to buy this based on what it's going to do for you. And with that, I don't think they're going to then come around 4 years later and say, yeah, by the way, we sold this great thing. It had all these awesome features that people, you know, who could spend the money and wanted it were able to pay for. But now for you lesser beings, we're going to sell the same thing without all those awesome features, but it still has this killer, environmental impact. So you should buy it too. That's Apple sells user experience. So they're not going to dumb down the thing that they make just so that other people can do good for the environment that spends money on cars.
I present to you as exhibit A, or unless we're up to a higher letter.
Sure, fair. Yeah.
The iPad Mini. The iPad Mini is a reduced experience from the iPad Air. I mean,
No.
I said that to be provocative.
Okay.
okay.
The iPhone 5C was a cheaper version of the iPhone.
Same user experience, though.
Yeah, exactly. So they can introduce in less expensive models that still offer a great experience of this car. This car that hasn't been announced yet.
I'm sure if they make the first one out of metal and then they say, look, we've got this cheaper one. It's the Adobe car, right?
Oh, don't hang your hat. Who's the pedant? Don't hang your hat on that, man. It could be smaller, right?
When I have the opportunity.
It could be smaller.
When I have the opportunity to bring in German engineering and Mexican know-how into the to the discussion here. The Adobe car is the brilliant thing. And for those of you that don't know, that was an awesome Saturday Night Live skit from years ago. So, kids, ask your parents about that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, Dave, I'm kind of with Brian on this one, where I think that Apple could come out with a second car later on that costs less but doesn't skimp on the user experience. And they do have their track record of being able to find ways to make that happen. iPad mini, iPhone 5C. We have several versions of iPods, or at least we have over the years.
Yeah, Apple could do a two-person car. You know, Apple could do a commuter vehicle. Apple could do the Super Segway. There's all kinds of things. Apple won't do the Super Segway, by the way. But there's all kinds of ways for Apple to have different price points in the market without having to sacrifice experience.
Yeah, I you may well be right. Of course, we're just speculating here. But my guess is I'm looking at the history of Apple, and they don't. Everything you mentioned is still way more expensive than the competition at that.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying it wouldn't be. I'm just saying that they will have different price points.
Right.
They're not going to be making a Volkswagen, the people's car.
No. No. That's right.
I mean, that's right. I don't think no one here is saying.
I don't think they're going to make you your $30,000 car either. I think you're projecting. Not. You're projecting your wishes into.
I didn't say they were going to make a $30,000 car.
Jeff did. So, you know. No.
Well, now I'm just projecting my wishes.
But Apple could do a $30,000 car if it was small enough. And the question is, would they?
Right, you'd be paying $30,000 for a car that is functionally the same as everybody else's, $19,000 car.
Yeah, maybe, except it's electric. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, real quick before we wrap up, because we are almost out of time. I'm curious if you guys have found that you are using your iPhones differently now that you have an Apple Watch. Like, and yes, this is totally a loaded question. Where I'm going with this is that I've noticed in the little over a week that I've had my Apple Watch, it has totally changed how I want to interact with messages that I get. I prefer not to pick up my iPhone anymore. I want to be able to speak into my watch, have my message go out quickly, and I move on.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Messages have moved, probably 60 to 80% to my watch, but it also leads me down a path of frustration with a lot of other things, like Twitter clients, like the built-in the Twitter official Twitter app. It's fine. I actually like it on the iPhone. Their watch implementation is crap. It doesn't let you do anything. Twitterific is great, and it makes me want to have those quick little interactions with with things. Whereas, like with Twitterific, I can, if somebody mentions me in a tweet or something, I can retweet it, I can favorite it, and I can reply to it right from my wrist. Whereas with the Twitter app, that's at least not currently possible. So,
on the Twitter thing, have you tried saying hashtag?
No.
Okay. So dictate a message. Okay. And when you say hashtag, everything you say after that becomes your hashtag.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Is that cool. Just in Twitterific, or is that in the... Well, I guess you couldn't do that in the Twitter app for the watch, right?
No, it's just the dictation feature.
Oh, it's just... Of course.
That's just Twitter encouraging us to use one hashtag at the end of our tweets as God intended it.
That's right.
As it was written.
Yeah, so I have moved most of my I've moved my mobile text messaging to my Apple Watch. If I'm sitting at my desk, it's still I still like going to the keyboard and iMessage.
If I'm at my desk, I will do a lot of my messaging from my keyboard simply because I'm command tabbing between applications.
Yes. Exactly.
So my hand's already there.
Exactly. Yeah, it has not changed my use of my computer for messaging, but when I am not at my computer, it changes my messaging. Yeah, that's right.
When the iPhone first came out, it changed the way we did lots of things, right? Computer in our pocket. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, when the iPad came out, That was such a fantastic device. A lot of what I had been doing on my iPhone, I found myself doing pretty exclusively on the iPad. And now that Apple Watch is here, it is actually further eroding those things that were iPhone-centric, and it's kind of interesting. And in each case, you know, by definition, the things that make the most sense to do on a particular device go to that device.
Yep, that totally makes sense. And I'm finding that a lot of those things I would prefer to have happen on my wrist now. And I guess that's really saying a lot, because I'm the guy that hasn't worn a watch for...
Oh, no, you were the guy who was pretending to us and the world and yourself that you weren't going to end up wearing this thing all the time. Hashtag LOL, 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 LOL,
LOL. LOL. Yeah, I know. And so we're a little over a week in, and I have worn my Apple Watch every day. And although I am glad to take it off every night, because having something on my wrist really bugs me. But apparently, the benefits that I'm getting from Apple Watch are outweighing the annoyance of having it on my wrist. So there you go.
There you go.
Hey, we're out of time.
It happens.
I know. So often. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Likewise, my pleasure.
And listeners, if you have found that that Apple Watch is changing the way you're interacting with the rest of your tech, I'd love to hear how. So shoot me an email at observations@macobserver.com, or you can reach out on Twitter. The Twitter name there would be @TMODaily. We will see everyone again tomorrow.